to another edition of the No Sports Podcast. I'm your host, Carter Carls. It is Wednesday, November 16th. We're 3 days away from Florida State kicking it off against Louisiana, a noon Saturday game at Doak Campbell Stadium. But more importantly, Florida State's got three games coming up against the Florida Gators. Got women's basketball on Wednesday, men's basketball on Friday, and then the big finale. Florida State football team will host Florida next Friday, Black Friday, at Doak Campbell Stadium. So we're going to get into all three of those games. We're going to get into the Louisiana game as well. But before we get to all that, we got an interview lined up with Florida State soccer coach Brian Penske with their current run in the postseason, talking about all that. So without further ado, here is Florida State soccer coach Brian Penske.
Yeah, so I'm here with Coach Brian Penske for the Florida State women's soccer team. And we're going to talk a little bit about how the season's gone and, you know, how everything's been for him. So start off, Brian, how you doing today?
Doing well. Thanks for having me on, Essen.
Yeah, so, you know, when the Florida State job came open, like, you know, what was the process of going into, like, you know, applying for it and, you know, seeing if you wanted the job and how that came about?
Yeah, I... You know, the day after, obviously, lots of shockwaves when Mark announced that he was leaving. The day afterwards, I had a conversation with Jim Curry, who oversaw and continues to oversee the sport of soccer here. And I knew Jim from my days at the University of Maryland, and he kind of intimated and asked that day, would there be an interest level on my part? And you know, I said I'd rather, you know, fit into this conversation right now as a person that's going to help him find a new coach for Florida State soccer. And that's what the next kind of 3 weeks was, for, you know, between Jim and myself. We talked about different candidates, and I threw out some names to him, and I had verbally reached an agreement with Tennessee on a contract extension. I just hadn't gotten the document yet, so I hadn't signed anything. And about 3 weeks into it, I kind of started having, you know, some thoughts about, giving this a shot and, you know, taking a chance, taking a risk in my in my professional life. And so Jim and I connected again, and I said, look, you know, if you're still looking for a coach, I'd love to have a conversation about it. And about a day or two later, we set up a Zoom, and then the rest is history.
Yeah, I mean, we've talked about it a little bit this year. You know, you got on campus, was it, you said April, right?
Mm-hmm.
And you know, students are doing finals and getting ready to leave, but you were able to meet with the team the first night on the job. What was that meeting like? You know, because you mentioned Beta Olson had just question after question, yeah, after question. Beata.
Yeah. It was. I think it was actually the first night of finals, Monday, April 25th, and you know, it's like when you're in the moment and in a time period. Time can seem like it's forever, but then the more you get removed, it's such a small amount of time. And you know, it was almost 4 weeks to the day when Mark had left, and for them it's that seemed like forever, totally understandably so, right? And for them, their sadness and their wounds were still open from that kind of sudden heartbreak. And it was not at all a situation where, you know, kids are sitting in the room frothing at the mouth, excited to meet their new coach, right? They were like, all right, let's see what this guy's about. And, you know, whatever, here we go. Let's see what our new reality is going to be. And and all of them had a lot of questions, understandably so, right? And it was kind of a short meeting. It was only about 45 minutes or an hour because a couple of them had to leave. They had SAC responsibilities and they had to study for finals. But I got to visit with them individually, each of them the next couple of days. And As we've discussed before, about 50% of them, probably more than that, close to 60% of them were in the transfer portal, and they had to see their processes out, and which I fully understood and kind of joked about in my opening press conference that I had just gone in the transfer portal myself and left the University of Tennessee. And of course, every kid needs to, you know, they need to make decisions for themselves. We all need to make decisions for ourselves, and that can be seen or perceived as selfish, but it's human, it's life, it's real, right? And we got to look after ourselves. We're all part of a team, but we also have to take care of ourselves within the team scope.
Yeah, I mean, so what was the next few months like? Because obviously they leave, and I don't know if soccer doesn't have, like, no contact period, like football does sometimes. Like, so what is that process like, you know, after?
Yeah, I mean, it was a balance between giving them time and space. Getting away from here, I think, was a really good thing for them, because the prior month was really emotionally exhausting, and the whole year was exhausting, right? Going all the way to the College Cup, that's coming out of the spring College Cup from the spring before. I mean, these kids have been through a lot, and so to get away and go to their respective homes and go to different parts of the country or different parts of the world and you know, train in different environments and be with their families and discuss things while also, you know, being on some Zoom calls, text exchanges, phone calls with me, and figure out what they wanted to do moving forward was all healthy. And some kids decided to, obviously we know, you know, Yuji and Madrill decided to go professional. You know, Pavlisko had a you know, hip situation that needed to be repaired, and so she decided to move forward with that and retire from the sport. And then a couple kids transferred out, right, because they didn't know what they were getting into here and felt like there was a better place out there for them. And thankfully, 21 of them decided to return and give. Actually, 20 decided to return, and we brought one transfer in Ekagini, and we've, you know, obviously been able to put together a pretty decent team. You know, then you fast forward to August, right? And the kids have been away, that I think they're happy and they're good over the summer and kind of coming to terms with things. But then we had to kind of have another meeting and several meetings, because now you start your new reality, right? In August, okay, you're on the practice field and Mark's not here, right? Mike's not here. Yuma's not here. This is our new team and this is our new staff and this is weird, right? And I think that's all been a process, like we've talked about in other conversations. You know, it's just, it's all different. And we had some stumbles, right, early on. And while you hate to go through those stumbles, those, you know, you appreciate life and you appreciate accomplishments more when you go through some hard times. And we went through some hard times and we grew together as a team and we talked through a lot of things as a team. And obviously, you know, so far we've come out on the other side and gotten to know each other. And I'd like to think the kids have respected our approach to their situations. And we've done so, we've tried to do so with sensitivity and openness and empathy. And now here we are. We're in a situation where, you know, we're on the stage where these kids have been for many years, and we're just trying to finish the job.
I mean, going back to the summer, like you mentioned, you know, kind of on pins and needles as a coach, kind of to see who's coming back, who's not. So who was that first call or text or, you know, whatever you got that kind of, like, you know, made you feel comfortable, like, okay, this is going to work out, you know? Because I'm guessing there was probably a lot of anxiousness, you know?
Oh, yeah, that's a great question. So it was actually the end of May, and I was up in Georgia going to visit with one of our committed kids and going to watch her at a training session. And I'm walking out to the field, and I open my email, and it's an email from compliance saying that Lauren Flynn has withdrawn her name from the transfer portal and therefore will be returning. And so I will forever remember walking up to that field in Atlanta and opening that email. And honestly, at first, my heart, you know, went into my throat, or throat went into my heart, whatever the phrase is. I thought it was the opposite. I thought it meant that she was gone when I read the email, and that was just probably my anxiety talking there. But it you know, when I read it about 45,000 times, it said that she's withdrawn her name, and I shortly called her afterwards, and we had a good talk. And then I thought, honestly, that the floodgates would open and that a lot of them would return, that she was just kind of the beginning and kids would follow. But back to what I said before, every kid is they're their own person with their own story and their own, you know, life to make decisions. And it really, the last one didn't really decide till mid-June. So it was really another 3 or 4 weeks where we had to stress about who's going to be on our team. What's our roster going to look like? All right. How many kids are we going to have? All those things. And it was it was a wild time, right? Because you're trying to recruit them / re-recruit them, but not really, you know, they don't know me from a hole in the wall, and totally trying to respect their decisions and the different predicaments they're all in. At the end of the day, they had to make the decisions that were best for them. And for the ones that decided to come back, I hope that, you know, when our season is over, they look back and are happy and proud of the decision that they made to stay at Florida State and continue to give this a chance. And I told them after we won the ACC championship that they showed a tremendous amount of toughness that weekend against Notre Dame and then against North Carolina. I said, but the ultimate toughness was coming back here. And it's not that it's easy to leave, but when you have a program that's as accomplished as this is, to come back and to put yourself out there again and potentially fail, that's hard. Right? That's tough, right? That's guts. That shows a lot of courage and a lot of guts. And these kids had a lot of courage and a lot of guts in coming back here and kind of putting their name out there again and trying to win again. And so it's nice to see the fruits of that decision and the fruits of their labor so far paying off.
You mentioned Lauren. I'm not sure if you knew her from, because you coached your sister, you mentioned at Tennessee. So, or was that Tennessee? Or
yep.
Yeah. Yep. So, that was kind of an interesting, like, you know, dynamic. Like, did you know her a little bit more because of this sister, or like, yeah, you know, what was that like?
I did. And
did you try to recruit her at Tennessee?
We did, absolutely. And I remember I was recruiting, sitting on a floor in a hotel when she called to tell me she was going to Florida State, and was obviously disappointed, but incredibly happy for her that this opportunity, you know, had come her way. And so I've obviously then followed her career here, right, closely because of my relationship with her sister and her family and a little bit her. And but so it's the same thing, no different, right? I wanted Lauren to return. And I told Lauren in that first meeting, I addressed a bunch of them individually in that team meeting. And I told Lauren that she was, in my, you know, humble opinion, potentially the MVP of the national championship game, the way she defended some of those BYU kids. She was phenomenal. And her growth as a player and, you know, I wanted her back, but I didn't want to beg her to come back. And I didn't want to beg anyone to come back. I wanted them all to make a decision that they were going to be comfortable with and them owning the decision. And that's what allowed me in the end to feel most comfortable about all their decisions, because they were given proper time, no deadlines, no pressure, no nothing. They had to do their due diligence, however, whatever that process looked like for each of them, and including Lauren Flynn. But certainly my connection to that family and her sister, Megan, was a lot of relief because she was also, and then you go to the field, right? She was the only returning back from last year's team, right? With Madrill, right? Deciding to leave, and Pav deciding to leave, and then obviously Gabby Carl and Jalen already gone. So getting her back was obviously a big deal.
Yeah, I mean, I'm going to try talking to Lauren and then hopefully Megan as well. So kind of do a feature on that. So, you know, what kind of player was Megan? What was she like, you know, compared to how Lauren is?
Yeah, you know, Megan was like her sister. I mean, Lauren was a winger her whole life. And then after the fall of 20, going into the spring of 21, I think it was Malia Berkeley who left at the winter break. And so they needed another center back. And so they put Lauren there and converted her. We actually had done that a little bit with her sister, Megan. Megan was a winger like Lauren, true left-footed player, sweet left foot, very fast. We tried Megan at left back a little bit, but decided, you know, that she's a better, you know, attacking player and getting serves in the box. And both are highly intelligent kids. Both take their academics very seriously. Both incredibly driven, conscientious kids. The most successful season in Tennessee soccer history was 2018. We went to the Elite Eight and lost to Stanford right before Stanford lost to these guys in the College Cup. And that was Megan's fifth year at Tennessee. And she was one of the leaders of that team. And I tell Megan to this day, one of the reasons why we went on that run and played so long was because Megan was dying for her career not to end because she loved it so much. And she had many assists in that in the SEC play that year. Also in the NCAA tournament, had an amazing assist against, I think maybe actually two against Texas A&M in our Sweet 16 game that got us to the Elite Eight. And funny story about Megan right now, she's been doing Teach for America in Hawaii for the last 3 years. And she just came back and literally called me middle of August, had just moved into her apartment in Charlottesville to go to get a master's in political science at UVA. And was like, I just moved into my apartment at 1 a.m. last night, but I can't get soccer out of my head. I love it. I've been playing pickup for the last 3 years. I've been training with Washington Spirit Reserve Team this summer. What do I do? And so I introduced her to an agent. This is all in August. And a week later, she went and met with her advisor at UVA and withdrew from UVA. And she is now playing professional soccer and got her admissions deferred for up to 2 years at UVA. So she will eventually re-enroll. But it's that kind of competitiveness that that whole Flynn family has, that where, again, you want a Flynn on your team because those kids, they hate to lose, right? They die to win, they hate to lose. And certainly Lauren's been that here for several years.
Yeah, and you know, you referenced the article a couple of weeks ago about, you know, how you had to blend your style with what Mark was doing here to, you know, get the players to buy in. And, you know, because, and that was a tight rope to walk in, because you're not, you know, people can point, you walked into a situation with a lot of talent, but that was not an easy one with, you know, trying to keep Florida State's culture alive and try to bring your culture here, right?
Yeah, no question. And this program has always been the benchmark. This program, Virginia and Stanford, I think have been kind of the top three programs in terms of playing the beautiful game and keeping the ball and playing an attractive brand. And certainly, you know, we didn't want to come in here and ruffle that. And I knew, because like I said, I was talking to Jim Curry in those 3 weeks, 4 weeks in April. I knew how important style of play was to this group, and finding a coach that was going to not turn Florida State soccer upside down. And we talked a lot about that in that first meeting at the end of April. And then not just at the end of April, but that back half of August, as we went through, you know, the tying match against South Carolina, the tie against Auburn, we had some real heart to heart video sessions and conversations about philosophy of the game, right? And how you want to play the game, how the game should be played, what the game looks like. Some great talks. I hope the kids feel that they were great talks. I do. And I think there has been a blend. I would say that we still play the Florida State brand. If people watched our ACC final the other day, they saw us, the goal we scored in the second half that put us up. You know, Flynn and Gilchrist and a little bit of Roque passed the ball around about 12 times in the back, had the center forward for Carolina chasing. Then all of a sudden we blended it with a big ball over the top and then connected three or four passes and scored a goal, right? That's a blend. Starting with, you know, vintage Mark Kerkorian in Florida State. And that's how we want to play. And I think playing that way is the most challenging to play against, because I've also played against teams, and Florida State has not been this, but that just keep the ball but never really threaten your goal, right? They just pass for passing sake, but it's all sideways, and they never really go with it, right? They don't want to ever, you know, pardon the expression, slit your throat, right? But it's terrible when a team wants to pass you to death, but also put balls behind you and make your back line uncomfortable. If all of a sudden, when your back line is uncomfortable, that is when a team is most stressed, the players on the field feel the most stress, and certainly the people on the sidelines feel the most stress. So we want to run kids into the ground throughout the field, but certainly make the backs and the goalkeeper uncomfortable.
Yeah, and so let's just do a quick rapid fire. You know, what was the most fun win of the year?
ACC final, unquestionably.
The revenge factor obviously played in there.
No doubt. No doubt.
Who's the alpha leader of this team?
Leilani Nesbitt.
Who's the funniest person on the team?
In a quiet kind of way, Jody Brown, but I probably still Lay makes me laugh.
Who has been who's like the mother of the team, like, you know, that cheers everyone up after like a Notre Dame or a UNC loss, you know?
Yeah, that's a great question. The mother hen of the group is obviously Clara, you know, but someone who speaks and tries to lift the group and inspire the group at times is Beata Olson. I think Heather Payne is really growing into that role of saying some really important leadership things. Jenna Neiswanger obviously weighs in and says things, you know, kind of an inspirational, let's go kind of person, goes back to Leilani. Another quiet, steady voice of reason and uplifting and positivity is Lauren Flynn. Kind of, you know, this is cheesy, but takes a village, and it's true. We have a village.
And then who's the most improved player since day one?
I would probably say Ron Ey. And it's not that her soccer's improved, but her self-belief has improved. And I think she's just relaxed now, and she's just playing, and she's not thinking. She's the sun comes up every morning, and Ron is our left back every game, and she is as dependable as the sunrise. And I think she's starting to carry herself like she belongs at this level and can play at this level and be a consistent player within our group.
Who could be the biggest surprise in the NCAA tournament the rest of the way?
You know, I obviously we've won enough games and performed at a high enough level that I don't know that there's going to be any surprises. But one kid who hasn't scored in a little while for us, you know, is. Is Heather, right? She scored on some free kicks, but she was close the other day in the run of play. Heather Payne, obviously. She scored on some penalties, but her ability to attack and help us going forward is really a big deal. And she's starting to get a little more confidence penetrating off the dribble inside and taking some shots from distance. She had a little bit on the corner kick the other day. She had the side volley that was cleared off the line. She's itching to score in the run of play, and I think it's going to come. And I've said it all year, she's a massive part of our team, and she'll continue to be great for us.
And I'll save the hardest one for last, team MVP.
Oh, gosh. I will refrain from saying anything there. However, when Mia Justice is on the sidelines, I would say it's Mia Justice, because her voice and her energy and her enthusiasm and her organization from our bench is a big deal. She obviously won a game for us at Pitt, which kept us alive for the ACC championship. But then, we joked about it before the start of the game the other day. She's like, can I have another chair? Can we pull up another chair with Bobby and Aaron so that I can be on the staff? And I'm like, we already got a chair for you right here, Mia. just sit between me and Bobby. It's perfect. So that kind of energy from the bench is a big deal, especially when you're Mia Justice and you're one of the best goalkeepers in the country and you want to be on the field all the time.
And when you guys have a shorter bench as well anyways in the first place, so it helps to have that vocal, you know.
Oh, the other day we did intros for the Florida Gulf Coast game. Maria's gone with Portugal. And so we have, you know, 11 kids out there doing the intros, and then we only have now 8 on the bench. And I'm like, gosh, this is hilarious to look at just the nothingness that is over there on the sideline compared to other teams.
Okay, you just heard Essen's interview with Florida State soccer coach Brian Pinsky. I'm now joined by Essen to talk about a bunch of Gators and Seminoles games coming up. We've got Florida State, Florida women's basketball on Wednesday at Florida State. We've got Florida State, Florida men's basketball this Friday. And then next Friday, we've got Florida State, Florida at Doak Campbell Stadium. 3 home games for Florida State. Let's talk about each of them individually. Let's talk about men's basketball. Essen, I know you were there covering the Troy game Monday. Another loss for this team, dropping to 0-3. First time really officially since 2000-2001 season, I believe. First time under Leonard Hamilton they've started 0-3. Essen, just your general impressions from that game.
Yeah, I mean, you know, and we talked about this off camera a little bit, you know, off the you know, offline about this a little bit. They're lacking that alpha male, that, you know, that alpha leader that can get them to, like, hey, let's get together, let's get our stuff together and go win this game. They were down by 4 points. No, they're down by 3 points, 64-61 with 3:58 left. And like, oh, they got, you know, they got this game. And then all of a sudden they get a rebound and Fletcher throws the ball out of bounds.
Yeah.
Chance they had to probably make a cut to a 1 point game. And then after that, they had another possession. I think they turned it over again. And then finally they hit the three and it was 67-61, but less than 3 minutes left. And I think at that point I was like, all right, I'm just writing this one's over.
Yeah. I was there at the game and I try to look at like the body language of the players, just like, okay, are they mad about losing? Are they trying to play inspired here? It just didn't seem like they really had it. Like it just seemed like they were hanging their heads and kind of moping around a little bit. It's so different than the Florida State men's basketball teams we've been accustomed to watching, where it's all about effort, it's all about hustle, it's all about just giving it your all. And we've seen this team all year not block out, you know, when shots are up, you know, and just make puzzling mistakes on defense, not closing out, not defending the perimeter well. It's kind of stunning. It's so much different, again, than just what we've seen. And I know they've been shorthanded, but you know, it's interesting because I think a lot of the feeling around the fan base right now is, well, if we had Bobby Miller, we had Jalen Gainey, things would be way different, or at least they'd be way better. And I think to a certain extent, they would be better. I think Jalen Gainey gives them a lot of what they need. Bobby Miller is a freshman who could potentially be a first-round pick in the NBA draft. But this team has a lot of problems, and we'll get into it. But I think even if you add those two guys in this team from day one, I don't think this is a 20-win team. It's certainly not a tournament team. You're probably talking about a team that wins 16 or 17 games at full strength. And without these guys, now you're talking about, I don't know if this team can get to 10 wins this season, which, again, just crazy. And you know, last year, I really think you could blame it on injuries, because when they were healthy, we saw them beat Duke and win some really impressive games. They swept Miami, who made the Elite Eight. But then, you know, the injury bug just got out of control. This time around, I don't know if you can fully blame it. I think this team just has a lot of fractures in it that even if they were at full strength, it's still not a 21 team.
Yeah, I mean, and the thing about you mentioned about Bobby Miller and Gainey is, if one of those is an alpha leader, maybe that, you know, gets a team to the next level, because that's what they're lacking right now. That's their biggest weakness. And we've talked about this. The talent is not lacking. The, you know, the skills, the talent is not lacking on this team. It's the cohesiveness that's just not there. The you know, like you mentioned, I don't know if the desire to go after rebounds, after play defense is there. We've seen a lot of hero ball, which is just weird to see in a offense for Hamilton. And, you know, it's not something where you're accustomed to seeing. It's a lot of, like, one-on-ones and everyone stands around. There was one possession where they hit a three-pointer. It looks good. The end result looks great, but they threw the ball, like, four or five times frantically until they finally accidentally got to an open guy and hit a shot. It was just a weird sequence. I don't want to say they're not interested, but at times they're disinterested in playing defense.
Yeah, and some of it too, I think, is skill. I mean, I don't want to, like, and some of it too, again, it's inexperience. You know, you're putting out so many freshmen out there. They telling them to switch 1 through 5 and last a whole game. You know, when I talked to Leonard Hamilton before the season, he told me that even his most experienced players, the Trent Forrests of the world, can only effectively play in this system for about 24 minutes in a 40-minute game. And when you're playing 7 guys, and on Monday it was really 6 guys.
Really 5 in the second, because Matthew Cleveland fouled out with 5 minutes left in the second half. So down the stretch, you only have 5 available players. No one can come out, and you played the entire game already. It's a 40-minute game. I think 2 players played 36 minutes. I think it was Fletcher and Green played 36 minutes apiece.
Yeah, no, it's brutal. And Fletcher's been hurt for a long time. He hadn't been practicing all that much. He's kind of got a back injury. And, I mean, it's not a system where you can do that. And they also don't have a true center right now. Nyheim McLeod out with an injury. So you're relying on a freshman, Cam Corin, to kind of carry the load right for you right now. And you're doing a lot of four guard stuff. And the defense is just lacking. They don't have the defenders that you're accustomed to watching. They don't have the rebounders that you're accustomed to watching. I really like watching Cam Fletcher. I think he gives a lot of effort, and I think he can rebound well. You saw him. I think he had a double-double. But elsewhere, I mean, there are just so many problems. And
I mean, like your point, you know, Green, great shooter. We saw his upside. 7 three-pointers, tied his career high last night. You know, and he's a very talented player, great shooter. If you remember, you know, Hamilton told us before the season he might be the best shooter they have in program history, is what they project him to be. So, and you can definitely see that potential to him. But the defensive end, he just is not a defender, you know? And that's part of the thing, is like, he's going to have to play big minutes, and I'm not sure if it's someone like him, you could have him defend 1 through 5 where he has to switch because he's going to get beat so often. Same with Nyheim McLeod when he's in the game. We saw it against Stetson where, you know, every time he got switched out to the outside, they would either drive by him easily or be able to step back into a three-pointer.
Yep. Yeah, and I mean, it's just hard to see because, you know, this is a front-loaded schedule, and these 3 games are supposed to be 3 of your biggest gimmies. I mean, you got the tournament coming up. You got Florida coming up, Purdue, Virginia, Duke, 4 conference games in December. All these games are going to be here before you know it without Bob Miller. He's not going to be back till January. Chandler Jackson, we'll see. I'm sorry?
He's back on my birthday against Wake Forest.
Yeah.
On my birthday.
Oh, there you go. Yeah, nice. Yeah. So, yeah, that's January. And by then, I mean, you're talking about probably having double-digit losses by that point. And I really think looking forward to just next season and the future of the program, you have to wonder, like, what can this program do as far as changing its ways? Leonard Hamilton has got this system that is brilliant and has worked for so many years. I mean, the 2020 team was robbed of potentially winning a national title. It works. But when you don't have the players and you don't have the bodies to do it, you can't just fit a square peg in a round hole. you have to adjust a little bit. I think you're starting to see that with some of the zone defense and the four guard stuff. I think you're seeing it a little, not always switching one through five, but next season, one thing that I'm curious about is they've only taken just a few transfers in recent memory. You know, Kayla Mills, Cam Fletcher, Darren Green, but beyond that, not a lot of guys. And to fix your inexperience, get some transfers. So I maybe that's the fix. I don't know, but
I mean, some of the fix is also just the experience that they'll get this year, regardless of how the season plays out. Is some of these guys will be second, third year in the system, which is going to help a lot. Because that's the thing about Hamilton's system is, you know, he mentioned the other day at the press conference yesterday, is, you know, a lot of times he's had juniors and seniors he's depended on to run the system.
Yep.
Unfortunately for him, that, you know, for whatever reason, they don't have a bunch of juniors and seniors or guys who've been in the system for 3-4 years. So next year when you get more of that, I think the team will automatically – because like we talked about, I don't think it's a major skill issue. I think it's just a major, like, you know, finding one or two pieces that will fill up a few more deficiencies. And so I think next year, and, you know, if they have 3 straight years of injury luck like this, that just, you know, what can you do?
They also need to find a point guard. They don't really have a submitted number one point guard that you can feel good about. You know, I know they talked about Caleb Mills with becoming more of a distributor this season. Haven't really seen that yet. Jim Worley hasn't really taken that step. I think that's a big part of it. You see this offense become hero ball. You see it become disjointed. Some standing around. A point guard fixes that. You know, so I think that could. I mean, you put a point guard in there. You put a Scotty Barnes in there. You know, like things look way better. So it could be a simple fix. I think they've got some pieces to work with. It's just, you know, it's the worst combination imaginable when you talk about inexperience, front loaded schedule, injuries, and yeah, tough to watch. But this Florida game, I mean, coming up, it is a game where we talk about effort, we talk about rebounding, things like that. This is a game where they can play with some pride, right? They can go into it and say, okay, we're 0-3. Like, let's play our tails off and see what happens, you know? Like, this is a program over the years that has won a lot of games that they weren't expected to win. And maybe when their backs are against the wall and they're playing a rival, maybe this is a game where they finally play inspired.
I mean, I think we talked about this before as well. I am excited. Not excited, that's not the right word. I'm interested to see how Hamilton game plans against Colin Castleton, because they don't, unless Naheem gets back tomorrow or on Friday, it's going to be interesting because Castleton has back-to-back 30-point performances, and, you know, he could easily get 30 and 20 in this game against Florida State on Friday.
Yeah, no, I couldn't believe that he's already back again at Florida. Again, another one of those Perry Ellis type players who's been there for 700 years, and I'm wondering if he's older than I am. Yeah, he's a great player.
Don't worry.
He's a great player. You know, let's move on to women's basketball. Florida State now 3-0. I thought their most impressive win so far was the Kent State one. You know, we talked about that last podcast, but again, just a little bit different than the men's team in that, like, this is an exciting brand to watch. Like, a lot of points, and Tanaya Latson is special. You know, she was ACC Player of the Week, right? So,
ACC Player and Rookie of the Week. So that's you know, nice, rare thing for her sweep, you know, and she's a talented player. I think she's she's all the way down to 27 points a game now, Carter. So,
yeah, she really regressed and had a 19-point game. Just a tough performance.
Now, Georgia State is, you know, a lot of people look at score. I think it was 85-80, I think, the final score for that one.
Yep.
I will say Georgia State is an athletic team, and I think one of the guys who was talking about it post-game was talking about they're playing FAMU next, so like, that's going to be a tough test for them as well. So it's not like Georgia State's not a great – it was not a great effort, great showing from them, but – you know, Sunday 2 o'clock game. third game of the season, they're still trying to figure each other out. The more importantly for them, that was the first game they had all 10 players available with what's her name playing? Omaria?
Maria Gordon, yep.
Yeah. She got back in, so they have all 10 players available again now, so that's huge for them. So I think some of that was also just making sure they were getting more players playing time, because you still got to keep your players fresh at this point in the season.
Yeah, it'll be fun. I mean, again, Wednesday, Friday, next Friday, it's a fun time. And then really, I mean, let's talk about next Friday, because Florida State football, storied rivalry, awesome games. But lately, it hasn't had a lot of relevance. It's very similar to the whole Miami-Florida State thing, where it's like, man, FSU hasn't really held up their end of the bargain. Florida's had some stinker years as well. But this is a game that I think people should be excited about, because Florida has had a recent surge here where I think fans, that fan base is starting to see some improvement and some, you know, big picture growth that they think can project to the next season. Florida State the same way. And it's like, man, there's actually stakes in this game. There's actually, like, both teams and both fan bases feel good about the directions of both of these programs now.
Yeah, I mean, who knew that releasing your best player, the defensive player, was the cure-all to that, the worst defense in the country? But, you know, that apparently worked. I mean, of course, they played Texas A&M and South Carolina, so it's not like, you know, they played some great offenses. But, you know, it's still a step for that program. But obviously, they'll be tested against Jordan Travis. 75, you know, the team, the school leads the country at 75 explosive plays of 20 yards or more. Once you get to bigger yards, they actually fall a little behind doing research, but 20 yards or more, 75 is the most in the country, so.
Yeah, and, I mean, Florida gives up a lot of plays on defense. They've done better against some pretty bad offenses, but yeah, I really think this could be a game where I think, like, Florida State should not have a problem scoring the football. I'm very curious to see what happens defensively, because we've seen them play at an unbelievable level the last couple weeks. Not against great offenses. I'm going to say, like, obviously Georgia Tech, Miami, awful offensively. Syracuse, they're just a different team, right? Like, Garrett Schrader's not healthy. Sean Tucker's not right. They've been bad against, you know, every team they play their last few games. Not trying to discredit them. I'm just saying, I think Florida is a bigger challenge offensively. And when you have the X factor of Anthony Richardson, who knows what you're going to get? Now, Anthony Richardson, it could be a 3-interception day and 106 passing yards, but it could also run for 150 and you know, score 4 total touchdowns on you. You just never really know.
Yeah, no, so in doing my research, Florida is actually tied in the country for 70-plus yard plays. They have 5 of them. They're tied with, you know, the Air Force, Army, and Middle Tennessee, so some real juggernauts on that list. But, you know, but you know, last week we saw against South Carolina, ETN broke out a 85-yard touchdown run, which is just ridiculous to watch, because you're like, this guy, you could see he might be more talented than his brother playing on Sundays already.
Yeah.
Andrew Richardson had, like, you know, a 60-yard touchdown run against Texas A&M, where it did not look like he was trying at all. Like, it was like, oh, are you running as hard as you can, sir? And he broke away. So it's a team that's interesting, that, you know, will definitely challenge Florida State with the offensive firepower they have. That's going to be a shootout, probably, which is going to be, you know, Bobby Brown's probably going to be like, what's going on here? He's not going to be happy about that.
Yeah. I really think, you know, I wrote a story yesterday, or I guess it was today, Tuesday, about Trey Benson and just how he's really come on these last few games. And these last two games could be huge for him as well. Florida's got one of the worst run defenses on Florida State schedule. I think Georgia Tech might be the only team that's worse. Louisiana, you know, let's face it, not a great team. But Trey Benson, before the year, said, I want to get 1,000 yards rushing. Right now, he's at 774, and I really think it's possible. He's got Three straight games. Yeah.
He's got 3 games left, too. So
3 games left. I think he could get it in 2 games. I really do. And he's second in the country in yards per carry. And that's why he's so close. You know, when I looked before the season, at, you know, Florida State has 13 1,000-yard rushers in its history. Every single one of them had at least 150 carries. And the only you know, every single one of them but one guy had at least 170. That one guy was Warrick Dunn. 2 separate years he had less than 170. So really, unless your name is Warrick Dunn, you need at least 170 carries to run for 1,000 yards. Well, here Trey Benson is. He's got 105 carries, and he's already almost up to 800 yards. He could get to that 1,000-yard threshold well before 150 carries. And it's just, it's, again, it's crazy to just see the growth that that guy has made in 1 year, having come off such a major injury, having had 6 total carries in college coming into it. You listened to him. You heard him say he had an anxiety attack before the Duquesne game. He was not really in his element that first 6 games of the year, where he didn't seem to have the feel for the game. But now
and
it's still like
100 yards against Duquesne, which is a crazy part. You know?
Yeah, yeah. But now it's like it is like a light bulb has come off for him. And now, I mean, he's running better than any running back Florida State has had since Dalvin Cook. He is running better than Cam Akers did. He's running better than, you know, Jayshon Corbin, those guys. And he's overtaken Trayshon Ward, Lawrence Toafili. This is the player we saw all offseason. I mean, ever since the first 2 practices, I was sold on this guy. Once he came out in the spring game, I was like, all right. The only question was the confidence, the injury, whether he'd get injured again, what kind of workload he'd see. But when you just watched him move in space, you knew immediately this was the best running back on the roster. Now it's come together for him, and it's going to be a fun career to watch for him, because if he doesn't go to the draft, you know, and he comes back next year, I mean, you're talking about a season to remember for Trey Benson if he comes back in 2023, especially behind an offensive line that has really improved this year.
Oh, definitely. It's been fun to watch him play. And, you know, it's interesting just watching him, you know, every time he touches the ball, he makes someone miss. He forces a tackle. He makes a defender look stupid. Like, no, Trey, that guy has a family.
And he gets better every time he carries it. It's so weird. It's like every carry, it's like he's learning on every carry he has. And yeah, I mean, defenders just, I mean, you look at the PFF grades, he's number one in elusive rating, he's number one in breakaway percentage in the country. He has forced, like, I think he's tied for the 7th most missed tackles in the country, and that's despite having like half the carries as all the guys around him.
One thing I think you've noticed and I've noticed is, I mean, he's picked up from teammates like Trayshon Ward. We praised after the first game against Duquesne, you know, that patience Trayshon Ward has. And we've seen that, you know, all year. But all of a sudden, Trey Benson is being able to sit back there a little bit longer and see the hole that he needs to go to. And I think that's why Norvell's giving him more carries, why he's getting more, you know, touches, is because he's becoming a complete running back. He doesn't have a ton of catches out of the backfield, but he can catch a ball out of the backfield. When you have Toafili, you know, that guy's better at catching the ball out of the backfield. I think you want to use him more because, you know, he's going to make defenders look silly as well. So, but Benson showed he could catch the ball out of the backfield as well.
Benson's the kind of guy you have to scheme a little bit for him. He has to kind of gain some steam and really get rolling. Whereas I feel like Ward and Toafili, you can put them in space a little bit more, you know, catching passes and stuff like that. So what it really is, I mean, it's cool to watch these guys because it's the very different skill sets that all kind of blend really well together. And one other thing I want to talk about, we'll talk a little bit about Louisiana. Louisiana, 24-point underdog. We're not really expecting anything crazy here, but something to watch is red shirts. You know, who's at the 4-game limit, who's close to it, You know, Mike Norvell talked about, we thought about putting A.J. Duffy in against Syracuse, but we didn't want to, risk anything and get him to that four-game limit. He's at two right now, three games left. Like, let's just, in case anything crazy happens, let's keep him at that two-game mark for now, because we'll probably want to play him against Louisiana. So, you know, those are the kind of things they're deciding. Just real quick, I mean, I think two guys that I think are worth watching in this final stretch to see, are they redshirting? Julian Armella, a freshman offensive tackle, he's at four games already. And I think with how healthy their O-line is now, my thought is let the guy redshirt. You don't need him in these last few games. Now, if there are injuries and you need it, like, okay, let's do it. But don't burn the guy's red shirt. He's at four games. Ronnie Hill's another one who is at three games. Really talented young running back for this team. I don't think you need to burn the guy's red shirt. You got three guys you like ahead of him. Play him against Louisiana, sure. But after that, like, let's.
Well, I'm not even sure he plays against Louisiana, because he might be one that you'd rather play in the bowl game, right?
He could be. I mean, it could be CJ Campbell time, you know? And I wouldn't blame him, you know. But again, bowl game, you can't always rely on that, because it might be a really close game, you know. So I don't know.
I do think Norvell probably, and you know, this is speculation, I think Norvell has an idea. The coaching staff has an idea of, like, of the three, who's not coming back, who's coming back? Benson, Ward, and Philly. They probably have, you know, I guess Ward can't come back, right? No, all of them are redshirt juniors.
All of them are redshirt sophomores. They can all come back.
So they're all coming back. You know, they all can come back in theory. I can't see Tofili leaving. I can't see Ward leaving. Maybe he's got word from Benson that, I'm leaving. And if Benson's, leaving, you could probably be like, let's do you a favor. We're not going to play you too much in the bowl game. You know, so I think we'll see Hill in this game. I don't think he's going to play the bowl game, but I'm just throwing a scenario out
there,
you know?
I mean, there could be opt-outs. You never know. Like, I mean, they're – happens all the time. If Benson goes to the draft, then you can see him opting out. You never say never. Not saying it's going to happen, but
I think Carter's saying he's opting out of the bowl game, guys.
No, I'm not. But hey, these are things to watch, though. These red shirts. I mean, in a game where not a lot is happening, you want to pay attention to the future. The fourth quarter does matter a little bit, because you're like, okay, what do some of these backups look like? You know, I mean, Tate Rodemaker, AJ Duffy.
If they're going to see AJ Duffy make some throws, he's going to be, I think they'll probably get, because I wonder if this is a game where they say, Tate, we like you. You've got some playing time. Let's get AJ Duffy some extensive time. Like, it could be one of those, as soon as Jordan Travis comes out in the third quarter, it's go straight to Duffy. Like, hey, let's get you some extensive work, because there's not a ton of games left for you. So, I'm not saying that's going to happen. I'm just throwing in a scenario out there. It could happen.
Oh, yeah.
I could see that happening.
No, I'm right there with you. And I think, too, what's interesting is Florida State, I mean, you see it some places, but not super common. They don't care when they're up 40. They'll throw the ball. They'll try to get the most meaningful reps that they can for their backups. They don't care if it hurts Miami's feelings that Tate Rodemaker is throwing a, 30-yard bomb down the field, because that's what's going to make Tate Rodemaker better. It's not going to make him better to just sit back there and hand the ball off 400 times. I actually really like it. Now, maybe don't get too crazy with it. Maybe don't do a Philly special up by 40. But, I think overall, like, this is meaningful reps for these guys, because they give them meaningful reps. They're not, hey, let's just hand it off to C.J. Campbell 500 times and then call it a day. They're throwing the ball downfield. They're leaving some guys in there. Malik McClain was someone that played a lot of snaps in the second half against Syracuse, because that's someone that, should have a very promising future in this program. So something to watch for sure. Essen, what are you doing score prediction-wise on this one?
Let's see. I think I mentioned the score earlier to someone else. So I'll say 49-7.
49-7. I'm going to go 41-10, and I'm going to – yeah, I think they'll score a touchdown. Three straight weeks without a touchdown allowed. Just, there's no way, right? Like, there's no way. So I'm just going to say that, but, I mean, this defense is really showing up. They want to shut them out. That's the big thing to watch. Jared Verse and his post-game press conference against Syracuse was kind of like, hey, I, you know, 3 points is cool and all, but we want it to be zero, you know? So, like, I think that's going to be a goal for them. Can they shut them out? I would be surprised if they did, but I'm just going to go based off of regression patterns and guess that they'll give up a touchdown.
Yeah, that's fair. And, I think one thing to remember for this game is that a lot of people are going to take for granted is Morris Holden, you know, Georgia Tech, Miami, and Syracuse get to play Florida State almost every year. You know, they play Florida State a lot. This is Louisiana's first trip to Tallahassee. This is their first time playing against, you know, against Florida State. This to them is, you know, they're looking to become bowl eligible, looking for 6 months. They're going to be motivated for that. But also, this is, you know, they saw what Jacksonville State did last year. Not that they're going to go into expecting that, but, you know, they know what this game means because, you know, if they have one play where, you know, they throw a Hail Mary at the end of the half and it's caught and they make a great play on it, guess what? That's me. We play on ESPN forever. And they know that's their one. That's their best shot of that because, you know, no one watches Louisiana otherwise. I'm sorry.
You're telling me people in Louisiana don't watch Louisiana? No, they watch LSU.
They watch I mean, Raging Cajun are better than, you know, Tigers.
True. No, but anyway, so any other stories you want to talk about that you've written this week? You talked a little bit about the explosive play story. Got soccer coming up.
Yeah, I mean, actually, one thing, let me pull this up quickly, is I think I'd be kind of interested to the Tallahassee area is, I want to make sure I get their names right. FSU women's cross country team is going to nationals on Saturday, and two girls on the team, Allison Churchill and Caitlin Wilkie, are from Child High School, are a part of the team. So I'll be talking to them actually Wednesday afternoon first a feature on them, you know, two Childs teammates, and they're doing well at Florida State. So it's kind of a cool local connection that they're doing well. So that's going to be a fun story. I'll have a story probably about Lauren Flynn played for scored a goal, and we got her post-game for FSU's win over at Florida Gulf Coast. Her sister actually played for Penske at Tennessee 4 years ago when they went to the semifinals and had their best season ever. So going to kind of do a feature, hopefully talk to both of them. I'll get Lauren for sure. I'm trying to get Megan, her sister, to get to talk to her as well. Kind of a fun feature in that, you know, just like, because what Penske told me, and you guys will probably heard already in the pod, is Lauren was the first person to decide to come back. And that kind of opened the, didn't really open the floodgates, he said, but it kind of got everyone else to start coming back as well. When they went into a transfer portal this offseason after the new coaching hire. So.
Yeah, very, very cool. I didn't know about that, so I'm really looking forward to reading it. And going to be a fun rest of the postseason for this soccer team. And one other story I want to plug for myself, a recruiting story. I'm going to leave it at that. Really excited to write about this week. With it being Louisiana week, thought I'd just kind of dip into recruiting a little bit and talk about something kind of, you know, off the path a little bit. So I think you guys are really going to like it. Should come out Thursday or Friday. So looking forward to hearing how you guys like it. And again, you know, we'll be at the game noon Saturday at Doe Campbell Stadium. You can follow our coverage at Tallahassee.com. You can follow us on Twitter. We're at Noel Sports. And yeah, please leave a rating. Please read a review on Apple Podcasts for us. And if you guys have any questions that you want us to answer on our podcast, we'd be happy to hear them. So our DMs are open, and we love hearing from you guys. So with that, we appreciate you guys for listening.
Thank you, guys.